And you are tuned to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. It is 8 p.m. Thursday evening. Time now for Education at the Crossroads with Basir Mchawi.
Barzagioni, good evening. Welcome once again to Education at the Crossroads. My name is Basir Mchawi. It is Thursday evening, so we are here. There's so many things that are taking place that we could talk about. You know, we would be here for hours and hours, and we would be telling you things that you either haven't heard or haven't heard much about. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you listen to WBAI in the first place, so we can inform you about things that you may not have necessarily heard about. This evening, we're going to focus on three things. We're going to focus on a reparations rally that'll be taking place on the birthday of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, August 17th in Brooklyn. We're going to be talking a little bit about the, the government's intrusion on the African People's Socialist Party. There's going to be a rally about that tomorrow, Friday, August 5th. And then we're going to shift gears and talk about the upcoming primaries, because many people think that since they voted already in a primary, that the primaries are over, or they're waiting for September, which is when historically the primaries in New York were held. Nope, it's a different ball game, and unfortunately, it appears that it's not being talked about on the level that it needs to be talked about. So in the second segment, we're going to be talking about the primaries, what you need to know about that, and how you can get out and vote. Because as revolutionary as we can be, One of the things that many of us learned is that since blood had been shed for us to vote, that we get out and vote. You know, I'll vote for dog catcher if that's the only thing that's on the ballot. You know, that is in terms of my upbringing and training. When I was 18 years old, when I was able to go ahead and register, I registered and vote relatively regularly. If I'm around, if I'm in the country or whatever, I go ahead and get out and vote. That's a whole thing in and of itself. I mean, we could discuss that too. My first guest is attorney Roger Wareham. He's going to be talking about the reparations rally, and he's going to be also talking about what has happened with the African People's Socialist Party. Brother Roger, good evening.
Good evening. And I'm probably going to say something about the primary before you turn me off.
Well, listen, as I said, there's so many things we could talk about.
They're all connected.
Of course, they're all connected. We could be talking about Brittany Griner. We could be talking about the Department of Justice going ahead and charging, indicting four police officers who were responsible for the death of Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky. There's just a lot of stuff going on.
Right. You only have an hour.
Nah, listen, you know, like Linton Kwesi Johnson said in one of his pieces, we need more time. We definitely
do. Yeah. That's why it's important that your program is on and that people support your program. And when they're doing fundraising, specify this program in terms of support, because we got to have it. It's very, very important. I think that's one of the losses we've sustained over the last 30 or 40 years in terms of the amount of Black-oriented programming that people had access to. It's been drastically cut.
I have to tell you, WBAI is currently on life support. Yeah. As bad as you may think it is, it's probably a little bit worse. So, I mean, that's something that we have to go ahead and address as well.
So, where do you want me to start?
Well, first, I think you need to start with some of your history in regards to reparations, because you're an attorney. You've been engaged in reparations on a number of levels as an activist and also as a legal scholar. So talk a little bit about your background in regards to the reparations movement.
Okay. Well, you know, I come out of an organization called the December 12th Movement, which began in 1987 and began on a local, statewide, and national and international level. And in the process of doing our work, particularly internationally at the United Nations, which we've been attending since 1989, we saw the importance of bringing international support to our national demand for reparations, because it is a demand that African people throughout the diaspora have to address in their particular national localities. And it's really an issue that goes across state lines and unites all African people. So in the particular of the work we did in the United Nations, we did a lot of organizing, pushing around the issue of reparations, pushing for a forum, which would be the UN World Conference Against Racism. The UN held World Conferences Against Racism in 76 and 80. And the focus of those world conferences was on South Africa, and Rhodesia at that point, because they had not got their independence and become Zimbabwe. So the last one they had, I think, was 1980. We proposed that there be a UN World Conference Against Racism in 1993, after we've been going there for 4 years. And of course, the Western countries opposed it, because their position was that by 1994, when Nelson Mandela had been elected president, that there really was no need on the human rights agenda to deal with the issue of racism, which is just astonishing. Except it was their position, because they knew that once you got past Rhodesia and South Africa, then they're coming dead at Western Europe and United States and Canada around racism. So they tried to knock it off the agenda. We, along with other people, were successful and lobbying for that not to happen. And eventually they agreed to hold a World Conference Against Racism, which was held in Durban, South Africa in 2001. We took 400 people there with the objective of having the World Conference declare that the transatlantic slave trade and slavery were crimes against humanity, that the descendants of the victims of those crimes against humanity would do reparations, and recognition of the economic basis of racism, that the underlying basis of racism is economics, and that's where it generated from, and that's what maintains it. And we were successful in doing that. And we came back from Durban, you know, with it was done through the African countries, the Caribbean countries that really forced that to go through, because of course the Western countries didn't want to deal with it, and the United States walked out. They had made their position very clear from when the conference was first proposed, that if the conference was going to address the issue of reparations or compensation, the United States government was not going to participate in it. So that started under Clinton and continued under Bush, for those who think that there's some significant difference. We came back. We planned to have a rally on August 17, 2002, a national rally, the first national rally in reparations. The day after we came back, the World Trade Center, the attack, the 9/11 attacks occurred. And that really created a setback in the momentum that had been generated around reparations. But we continued our work. So in 2002, we planned for the rally. In 2002, I was also part, one of the lead counsels in a lawsuit that had been brought really at the initiative of Deidre Farmer Pellman, who was a law graduate who did research around, I think it was Aetna, I think, in terms of connections between companies that presently exist in the United States and their relationship to the transatlantic slave trade and slavery. And she did a lot of research. And eventually we brought a suit against 17 companies who we maintained could demonstrate their present day existence was tied to the either prior companies or companies they absorbed that had ties to the slave trade and slavery, in terms of insurance, in terms of transportation, in terms of tobacco. And eventually that case was consolidated, because we brought them in about six different areas around the country, before a judge in Chicago who had been appointed by Reagan, which was not a good sign. And he dismissed our suit on a whole bunch of grounds, and then went to appeal. And eventually the Court of Appeals dismissed it on the sole ground that we were not, it's called standing, we were not able to demonstrate the connection between the named plaintiffs and their ancestors' relationship to the named defendants. And that was the grounds on which it was dismissed. So that was, but the whole purpose of the suit, because most of the reparations lawsuits that have been brought in the United States are not really resolved by the law, they're resolved by some sort of political negotiation after the lawsuit is brought, in terms of the Japanese who were interned during World War II, a number of the indigenous people who've received some form of reparations. It came through some form of negotiation. So, but we brought it because it was important to do that and to heighten the discussion, heighten the momentum, which it did around the whole issue of reparations. So over the past 20 years, there's been highs and lows in terms of the push for reparations. And then I guess it was around the 2016 election, when Trump was running, a number of the candidates who no longer had Barack Obama as something to get the black vote out, started to talk about their support for reparations, which was clearly blatant and opportunist for most of them. But once again, the momentum began to push around that whole question. So when Biden was elected, our position was this was an opportunity to break the stalemate, because there's a legislative stalemate around reparations. It has been in the House of Representatives since 1989 and has never made it out of committee, the H.R. 40.
H.R. 40,
and our position is that, there's got to be some other way to deal with it. We cannot rely on the vagaries of U.S. congressional politics, even because when it was first introduced, it was a Democratic Congress, a Democratic president, the chair of the committee that it was before was Democrat Black John Conyers, who introduced it. And with all that, they still could not get it out of committee. So our proposal when Biden was elected was, since the president has the capacity to issue executive orders, and I'm sure people have become very familiar with that over the last few months as they've you know, issued executive order after executive order sending money to the Ukraine, that he should issue an executive order with a partial down payment on reparations of $50 billion that would be directed towards the healthcare delivery systems in our communities, in Black communities, because that's one of the real manifestations of the institutional structural racism we face, is what it's done to us around our health. And then it was even exacerbated with the pandemic, that we're under attack in so many spheres, but health is one of the key ones. And we thought that this would be an icebreaker in terms of shaking loose some money and addressing an issue that made reparations very real to people and made it real in a collective way, as opposed to the perception that many people have, is that, you know, I want a check in my mailbox. Our position, our view of, is that we were victims of a collective crime, and that the repair for that, the damage for that, should be collective as well, and not focus so much on individuals, but on us as a group, as a people. So that's what brought us to August 17, 2002. We picked that date because at that point it was the 115th anniversary of the of Marcus Garvey, and we thought African people and what he represented in terms of self-determination and the demand that we control our own lives, that would be appropriate day to have that rally. And so it's 20 years later. We're holding the rally, just given all the health and travel things that are going on. We decided we're going to hold it in the People's Republic of Brooklyn at Bedford Stuyvesant, which is at Marcy and Fulton Street, otherwise known as Harriet Tubman Boulevard, in Brooklyn, from 4 to 7 on August 17th. We're still pushing that demand for Biden, who said, if it hadn't been for Black people when I was at my lowest, you all had my back, and I know I couldn't have won. That he's been defining what his having our back is, as opposed to us defining. Part of the definition of having our back is passing, you know, putting out this executive order for a $50 billion down payment, partial down payment on what's owed us for reparations, to get the ball rolling. So that's where we are in terms of August 17th. We call it reparations and resistance, that, you know, they're all tied together in terms of how do we move forward in the 21st century in the United States? And that reparations is key to that, because reparations provides the material benefits we need to be able to deal with the myriad ways that we are under attack, particularly now as the United States economy is in such a crisis. But they always seem to find money for things that they want to. They'll print it or whatever. But when it comes to Black folks, you know, it's always another excuse. So that's where we are. That's why we're encouraging people, to come out at 4 p.m. on August 17th. The rest are Bedford Stuyvesant Reparation, we're going to call it Reparations Plaza. from 4 to 7, there'll be different speakers, there'll be cultural things. But it's really to show that we can make the demand for reparations concrete. And we think that it's very important that people come out from around the city in the tri-state area. If you're fortunate enough to have a job, and if you're not on vacation, then take off early. If you're on vacation, make this a priority to come out to.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that's happened in the last few years is there's been some confusion in regards to who would be eligible for reparations. Mm-hmm. We've had organizations like ADOS, yes, the American Descendants of Slavery, who talk about, well, unless you are actually, you can link yourself historically to someone who was enslaved in North America, that's the only way you should be eligible for reparations here in North America. I know I have argued, I had said, you know, for instance, I gave two concrete examples. I gave Marcus Garvey and Elambe Breath. And yeah. I said, well, look, these are people who were born other places, but they came here and they struggled and organized here. Should they be able to get reparations here? And the answer from the ADOS representative was no. their answer was no, and that Garvey or his descendants would have to go to Jamaica to go ahead and seek reparations, and Ilambe, would have to go to
Barbados,
you know, in regards to going ahead and making his claim or his family's claim. How do you see that?
My parents are from Jamaica. Not my parents, my grandparents are from Jamaica. They came, they worked, they left Jamaica. My grandfather and his brothers worked on the canal, and he came here in 1920. And my position is, and our position is, that the ADOS position really almost works as a fifth column, as a disorganizing effect in terms of the struggle for reparations. That's why I said our position is that we suffered a collective injury, and that now it requires a collective repair. Now, we cannot tribalize or discriminate for those people who are in the United States at this point to say, well, you can't benefit from this because you weren't born here or your parents weren't born here. What we do know is that all Africans were affected by the transatlantic slave trade and slavery. That's what our presence throughout the Americas, aside from those Africans who traveled before Columbus got here, but the great majority of Africans who are here, our presence is tied to the transatlantic slave trade and slavery. And for those who come from the continent, it's tied to colonialism. So all Africans were affected by it. By making it a collective repair, then we benefit from it. And it avoids that question of, can you show that your parents were born to, you know, in the United States? In terms of the lawsuit we brought, the particular of what the judge said was, if you can show that your parents or your forebears were tied to a particular company, that makes sense. But in terms of the general demand for reparations, and that demand can only win through a mass collective response and demand by Black people. And so anything that really comes at that reduces the chance of anyone getting reparations. So our position is collective crime, collective damage, collective repair.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we know is that when we're unified, that we are most effective as a people. The last time I figured we were really, really unified was, I guess you would have to say something like the African Liberation Support Committee. Right. And you see how effective that we were in regards to going ahead and quickening, let us say, the liberation of the continent of Africa, those nation states that were still under colonial rule, let us say. Mm-hmm. At this particular point, you know, there are several organizations that are seeking reparations, and I think that our people are somewhat confused. So first of all, I think that we have to have some kind of, you know, educational process in regards to educating our people about it. But the other thing is that we have to see how we can unify ourselves in regards to going ahead and making not disparate, separate calls for reparations, but one kind of unified, strong voice.
I agree with you. I think I would just add, in terms of when we were unified, when we went to the World Conference Against mm-hmm. Racism in Durban, we had pulled together the African people from South America, Central America, Australia, Europe, everybody. We brought everybody together around that demand, because it would not have come through as a Durban Declaration Program of Action had it not been for that unity, and united with the African group and the Latin American group, Latin American and Caribbean group. I think that was a tremendous show of unity, because they were under tremendous pressure from the Western countries not to approve that. So I think that was a more recent example of that. But in terms of what you were saying around what's happening now, I think, once again, our position is collective crime, collective response. One of the things that has been happening is that people have been fashioning local and sort of separate responses to reparation that may be tied to housing, it may be tied to healthcare, but it's local. And what we, and I agree with you, we need a national response. It needs to come primarily from the federal government and then from institutions. But I think that it does get confusing to people. I think the definition of what reparations is gets confusing to people when you have these disparate sort of responses. There's some stuff in North Carolina, there's something in Illinois and in Evanston. And I think our struggle has got to be that we need a national response. We need a national demand. That's why the idea of the executive order is make the demand on the president. He represents the country. And by doing that, I think it creates in people's minds that this is a national issue. This is a federal issue. This is who is in the final analysis, this is who is responsible for getting our definitions. And I think it brings people unity around that.
Mm-hmm. Finally, tomorrow, the December 12th movement is going to be having a rally in support of the African People's Socialist Party. Talk a little bit about that. Sure. Of course, I think many people who listen to WBAI understand what happened. You know, they've got some knowledge of it, but please, you know.
Tomorrow we're having a press conference to support the African People's Socialist Party and the Uhuru movement, who last Friday were raided by the FBI in their headquarters in St. Petersburg and in the residence of part of their leadership in St. Louis, Missouri. And ostensibly, they haven't been arrested yet, but they've been cited as unindicted co-conspirators of a Russian organization, which is an anti-globalization organization, which, according to the Justice Department, is really an agent of the Russian Federation, and whose objective is to create support for Russia and create dissension inside the United States. And that this Russian national basically recruited the African People's Socialist Party and their different components to be agents of Russia, because they support according to the indictment, they support separation and secession, and that will create chaos and dissension in the United States, and that will inure to the benefit of Russia. And what we see, particularly us, because not, as many of your listeners may know, several of us were victims of the same sort of campaign back in 1984 when Giuliani, who was then the U.S. attorney, Reagan, who was then the president, said he was launching this campaign against preemptive strikes against terrorism. And they weren't talking about communism at that point. They just switched the term. It was now terrorism. And so 500 Joint Terrorist Task Force agents came and arrested eight of us in the middle of the night, four black men, four black women, and accused us of several conspiracies to rob armored cars so that we could finance breakouts of political prisoners who were in various jails across the United States. And those people who knew us, who knew our work and knew that we had spent our entire adult lives struggling for the liberation of Black people, such as the African Liberation Support Committee you were referring to, and police brutality, against police brutality for jobs, it was an attempt to really come at what they perceived to be a small group of people without any support to create an atmosphere where people would be frightened to participate in any type of mass work to better the conditions, improve the conditions of their lives. Eventually, they lost that. I wouldn't be here if that were the case, because we were looking at 150 years in jail, because we were able to mobilize the community to see that we can't let the government isolate people who are fighting for us, because if they do it in one place, the people they feel have the least support, and they'll just keep moving. And you know that old saying around, if they come for you in the morning, they're going to come for me at night. And so that's why we think it's very important that people come to the press conference. It's going to be at 12 o'clock tomorrow. It sits in front of Sisters Place, which is at 456 Nostrand Avenue, which we have renamed Frederick Douglass Square 2 years ago. And that's what even Google refers to it as that by now. So 12 o'clock tomorrow, people need to come out to that. People need to understand that what's happening with the African people is an attempt to just really divide and tribalize our community and make it harder for us to resist collectively. Because if they're able to do that, then they'll be able to much more easily control the type of demonstrations that happened back 2 years ago when George Floyd was executed. And that's what their concern is. How do we stem the resistance that is inevitably happening? All those things in the human rights, the restriction on abortion, the restriction on cutbacks and environmental factors, all of that is affecting how people are interacting. And the government's and ruling class's concern is, how do we prevent the inevitable resistance that's going to happen? And so by attacking African People's Socialist Party and the Uhuru movement, they see that as a step towards them consolidating fascism and their ability to rule by terror.
Mm-hmm. Give a number.
Because you're getting ready. 718.
Yeah, give a number or a website or something so people can get further information about
718-398-1766. That's 718-398-1766. Or you can go to d12m.com in terms of website. And I just want to say one last thing in terms of the primaries that are coming up. For those people who are in Queens, vote Gregory Meeks. Gregory Meeks put forward a bill called the Russia Malign Acts Behavior in Africa Act. And it's basically what it's saying is that it's targeted those countries who the United States wanted to have them vote for their resolution in the UN condemning Russia. And a number of African countries said, we don't have that contradiction with Russia that you have, and we won't do it. This act was put forward by Gregory Meeks and passed the House, which basically says those countries which didn't go along with us obviously are being manipulated by Russia because they don't have the good sense to make their own decisions around foreign policy, and that they should be punished for doing that. They should have sanctions. And also that those groups throughout the diaspora, particularly in the United States, are also being manipulated and they need to be targeted as well. So it really ties into what's happening with the African People's Socialist Party and what's happening in this country. So,
yeah, we also need to say that Gregory Meeks was accompanied Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan. You know, we saw him there. He's also a great supporter of AFRICOM, the U.S. military expansion throughout the African continent. And
has been cited as one of the most corrupt politicians in Congress, I believe.
Well, listen, you know, we got a step to Gregory Meeks. You know, many of us remember him when he was just getting started. So he's forgot where he's come from. And he also forgot who he is literally beholden to.
Got that right. Thank you, brother.
Listen, really good. We've been talking to attorney Roger Wareham. He talked about August 17th at Restoration Plaza. 4 o'clock there, and tomorrow for the press conference in front of Sisters Place, the corner of Nostrand Avenue and what's that?
Jefferson.
Nostrand and Jefferson, right there on the corner, 12 noon. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. This is Education at the Crossroads. Stay tuned because we're going to be talking about the primary, something that many of you may have forgotten about, but early voting is starting really, really soon. So stay with us. We're going to be back shortly with that. First, a little musical interlude since Marcus Garvey's birthday is coming up. And I'm not going to be on next week. Let's hear something in terms of Burning Spear talking about Marcus Garvey.
Scary words come to pass. Marcus, scary words come to pass. Can't get no food to eat. Can't get no money to spend. Whoa. catch them.
Burning Spear, who will be performing at Central Park Summer Stage before too long. So if you haven't seen Burning Spear perform, you need to go ahead and do that. Central Park Summer Stage. Every summer, one of the things that makes it good to be in New York in the summertime. So you can definitely go ahead and check him out. On the line with us, I think we should be okay now. We're switching around here. We're using different forms of technology. I was on Zoom. Those of you who want to see the conversation that I just had with Attorney Roger Wareham, you can do so on Facebook at Facebook. Well, we did Facebook Live. You can go to Education at the Crossroads on Facebook and see that conversation. But right now, we're talking about primaries, the primary elections coming up with M. Saidiya McLaughlin, who we have to say, I guess, is a electoral activist at this particular point. M. Saidiya, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I'm glad to be here once again. This is a Black August, I will say that.
Sure is.
And let me just say, and Black August reminds us of a lot of Black political prisoners, free Brittany Griner, and the Phoenix. Mercury did a little demonstration on them just before their game, just to let you know how we're still keeping up and how the world of sports right now reflects a lot of things that are happening.
Yeah.
And it also ties with even stuff around reparations, as we were talking about earlier.
Right. One of the things we have to say is that the WNBA has been unswerving in their support of Brittany Griner. I mean, it's been very, very, very apparent at every game, at every opportunity that players or coaches have an opportunity to open their mouths. Brittany Griner is part of the conversation.
Yeah. Even the NBA Players Association with CP3 and LeBron and all of them, you know, because they understand that there is no difference. I am really surprised at some of the late responses, but if you think this has nothing to do with voting, or people think that there's no tie out here in terms of voting and changing things and dealing with elected officials, they are totally mistaken, and that's a problem for a lot of people to kind of put together. But let me just say, I in no way am Saidiya McLaughlin speak for the Board of Elections, okay? So I'm just... This is one of the things, you know, Basia, we all go back a long way, you know, like when Roger Wareham and all of us were young, we all were committed to a certain level of political interventions and also civil rights movements. So this is right now, this is my piece to connect as many people as possible and then provide some information. So with that, you know, I will say that I think that people should pay attention to some dates. Right now, today is August 4th, and Monday, August 8th, is the last day to request your absentee ballot in New York. I know there's primaries going all over around the country, and you also know that certain things have been happening to turn the tide. So we're going to soon know who we should not vote for. And we should also know what people will stand for or not. Mm-hmm. And so, on the 13th, and if people don't remember, because people don't read the back of their ballots years ago, there was a push for early voting. So the 13th of August begins early voting up until 9 days. They arrest, and then the next day, what? August 23rd will be the primary day. Now, and then there is no primary in September. There is no primary in September. There
Not
is
anymore.
No primary in September. I have to say that because people don't even know that. And the other piece is, where do you vote? How do you know where to vote? I know we've been getting a lot of junk mail. We've seen pictures of people running that we haven't seen for various organizations, from various organizations and for various positions. We've seen some people come out of the woodshed to vote because they don't like what's going on. But early voting is a different form. You can vote at designated centers in your area. And usually they're about 10 to 20 per jurisdiction. Now, what jurisdiction is that these days? Well, you just know we just had redistricting. So you may, one of those sites could be across the street from you, but that may not be your jurisdiction. So you need to go online to various places, New York City Votes, Board of Elections, call, so forth and so on. But you got to be registered. So you can register, you get an absentee ballot. But if you get an absentee ballot, that absentee ballot is going to be tagged in the computer so that we don't have a duplication of voting. Somebody calls it something else. So that if you ask for an absentee ballot and then you go to the site, you will now have to fill out and you have to vote by affidavit. Okay? So now where you go between the 13th and the 21st is a different place, or maybe. And on the 23rd, you go to your regular site. But what is your regular site? We still don't know that because, as you know, they like a district. I'm in Brooklyn. I'm in the People's Republic. So Park Slope has now been redistricted. The southern part of Park Slope has now been redistricted to include people from Staten Island. And I'm sure that has happened all around. That's not a first because, you know, Herman Badillo represented the Bronx, and AOC kind of represents that too. So you need to find out what district you're in. You can find out what district you're in now, and I repeat, now, until courts may overturn this redistricting plan or the gerrymandering. Of course, you could find out, put your name in certain places, or there's a card that was sent to you called a fast tag. Well, we don't read those things, and we throw them away. If you have a fast tag, it will tell you that. Do not assume that where you went last week or in June will be the same place that you went, that you will go in August.
Now, here's a question.
Who knows where you'll be going in November?
Yeah, here's a question, and I think it's an important one, and that is, we had a primary in June, and now we've got another primary in August. What happened?
I can barely hear you.
You can barely hear me? Really?
Yeah,
all right, let me
low.
Go. Okay, let me go up. Is that better?
That's great.
Okay. Anyway, what I was saying is we had a primary in June.
Now you went down again.
We had a primary in June. At least on BAI, I'm way up here. I don't know what's happening in terms
up.
Of hearing me.
I have to turn it down here because you're so far up.
Let me see what's happening on my end.
Yeah, it's you. It's not me. And I'll
I'm
come
good
down
on
a little
my
bit.
End. Go ahead, Bruce. All right. I can hear you, though.
Okay. Anyway, what I was saying was, we had a primary in June, and now we've got another primary in August. What happened? Why do we have two primaries?
Well, two different things. As a result of the census, hence redistricting and gerrymandering, and the amount of people who applied or filled out an application for the census, we lost a member of Congress. So that also means that we lose a certain number of electors. And once you lose an elector, then, hence, you got to now reconfigure so that the number of electors represent the whole state. So in terms of that, now that means you have to have people got to ask out? That's not a curse, but they got knocked out. So now you got to have people to run or rerun. Then that means also in losing congressmen, okay? And it's time for every 2 years or so we have to vote for representatives to Congress. Then remember what happened with Hochul. Hochul was never elected. She was, due to, the chain of order, she became the governor for the stuff with Cuomo, the whole Cuomo debacle. Then they chose a different lieutenant governor, not necessarily in the order that it would or should have been normally. So now we have somebody else running for lieutenant governor. We vote in this state for two different people. So we had the Congress, and then last year we had the mayor. So they would create, they had to choose specific dates for primaries. Since the institution of early voting in this state. Now, people would have known about that if they had looked at the back of their ballots in the last two or three elections. People, even as far as 2020, would say, oh, I'm just going to vote for the president. I asked people, that wasn't the last time you vote. Well, you know, the last election, what last election was that? Lincoln. No, they don't say that. But Obama or something like that. Well, no, you got to keep voting. You got to keep voting. And if we learn nothing from the Trump administration, we also learn that the lower levels will impact the upper levels of government. And so every year there are elections. I don't know what else you want to know.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that happened.
Governor, lieutenant governor. I think the public advocate might have to be voted for. No, he just got one last.
No.
But those two particular positions are very important. Now, I've heard people say some serious things about why would I vote for her? You know what that's about. The point is, just like when we voted for Biden or those who chose to vote for Biden, we got to start making some realistic choices and then backing them choices up. Especially here in New York City. Because if you don't think that New York City is becoming almost like a newer South, then you ain't paying attention.
Yeah. Now, in the upcoming primary, we're voting for Congress, and we're voting for, I believe, state senators. Now, one of the controversies has been is that what has happened is congressional districts have been changed in many different kinds of ways. Where I am in the North Bronx, our congressperson, who is Jamal Bowman, his district, they've taken about a quarter of the black population that was in his district previously. Out of that district. They've moved the district further north into White Plains and, you know, other parts or whatever else it is. And one of the interesting things is that his opponents have been funded by both Democrats and Republicans because they're attempting to try to go ahead and get rid of him. Because, you know, he sees himself as one of the insurgents along with, you know, AOC and, you know, some of the other more radical Congress people. So it's going to be an interesting fight. And my problem is that there has not been enough education regarding the fact that another primary is actually taking place. Okay. I haven't seen ads on television.
I get that. You will begin to see stuff as late in the game as possible, maybe up in before. But don't think funds have not been directed to New York City for increased education. As far as I know, and I could be wrong, and somebody out there can correct me, the New York City, New York State, maybe New York State also, Board of Elections does not have an education department. And because we have been hoodwinked into believing there's only Republicans and Democrats, we only think along Republican and Democrat lines. So that also knocks some people out. Coming up is general elections, okay, even though we also have, prior to that, party-oriented. But we got to stop thinking... You know, we know in reality that there are at least three or four parties. And we got to stop thinking, I mean, you can register as a Democrat, you can register as a Republican. I don't care what you register, but you got to vote. But you have to make sure, you know, sometimes there's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. But sometimes you got to look at your vote as a bargaining chip to take it, you know, sort of like operational unity. Who is going to do the best thing for me? Now, who's going to be the best thing for me may not be the same person who is going to be the best thing for Staten Island. So you can imagine the folks between Staten Island and Park Slope fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can imagine district leaders. The Democratic Party is also going through all this arguing and augmentation, just like the Republican Party is. But the point is, we should not stray from what our goal is and keep our eyes on the prize. District leaders are doing different things in various parts of the city, but district leaders have been, because of redistricting, sometimes they don't represent the same person. So you should always find out who your district leader is, because that's where it starts and develop a relationship. That's how people get to become more involved in election processes. As you know, there's been a shakeup too in the Democratic Party in Brooklyn especially. And in Brooklyn, where, you know, with the majority of the population not necessarily being white, there's some issues there. And then now we have a strong immigrant population, and that's creating a whole bunch of issues. Who should represent my community? And then there's issues around gender identity, what's happening with schools, where these schools are. You know, what, you know, I live in one of the richest districts in probably the country. But these buildings, you know, got proposed 20 years ago, when ain't nobody moving in them. Why? COVID took them. So what do we do about that? Where do we take our vote? What do we say? Oh, well, they're homeless people, so we need to use our vote in a sense that, well, you know what? Those buildings are not being occupied. These homeless people are using our dollars through public assistance, blah, 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 blah. Move them in there. And that's going to create an issue for people who had a certain class and caste image of what this neighborhood should be, even though we know what
you remember. You remember, there have been high-rise buildings that have been built in Brooklyn and in Manhattan where there are two entrances. There's an entrance for the rich people, and then there's a poor people's. there's an entrance for the poor people. But listen,
in some places there ain't no entrance for the poor people. There ain't no exit for the poor people.
You can't get out. You can only get in. I hear that. Listen, we're out of time. Just give the dates in terms of the primaries again, and we'll see what
Monday,
we can do.
Though, first Monday, if you want to do absentee, and you think because you don't see people at the polls that people ain't voting, they might have voted absentee. You know, don't mistake that. Oh, one key thing real quick. Do you know what the results of the June primary were?
I haven't seen them posted, no.
I don't think they've been finished counting. Is it that interesting? So, anyway, August, this coming Monday 8th, absentee ballot deadline, or you can get your absentee ballot up until that deadline, and you got to mail it in, and you got to have it signed by a witness, and you can deliver it inside a poll site. Don't take no putting it outside a poll site. If you see a box outside a poll site, that ain't a poll site. It's supposed to be inside. That's what we do in New York. Second, the 13th, next week, until what? The 21st. Is early voting. Various hours, various centers. Each center is a conglomeration of many districts. Check your district. But if you choose not to vote on that day, and don't let anybody turn you away if they say, well, you know, you can register or change your name on blah, 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 blah. No, you want to vote then, okay? You don't want to wait till the 23rd. And then on the 23rd will be the official election. We're at the end of the 23rd. All the votes from August 13th until that night and the absentee ballots, affidavits will all begin to be counted again. And then we will finally get up to what? November. September. So that we can choose the candidates we need to run for governor, congressman, so forth and so on.
All right.
Okay?
Listen, yep, got to go. You've been listening to Education at the Crossroads. Last, we've been talking to electoral activist M. Saidi McLaughlin. Prior to that, attorney Roger Wareham. And we're out of here next week. We'll be on fundraising break. We'll be back on August 18th. Peace.
And send BAI some money.
Okay? Yeah, they need money, for
sure. In the
sure.
name of this program. I know you get preempted because of certain things. But maybe producers should be on when we have those January 6th elections.
All right, gotta go.
So that you could give your point of view and the audience is not messed up about hearing your voice. That way it shows you who's really involved. Yeah. Okay. okay? Take care.
Marcus Garvey words come to pass. Marcus Garvey words come to pass. Can't get no food to eat. Can't get no money to spend. Oh. Can't get no food to eat.
Are you ready to be inspired? If so, I want you to listen to my show. I'm Harriet Cole, host of Dream Leapers here on WBAI. What I do is to bring amazing guests, artists, producers, writers, business owners, entrepreneurs who have accessed and activated their dreams and who will tell us how they did it to inspire us to do the same. Friday mornings at 9 a.m., tune in to WBAI to listen to Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole. I know you want to be inspired. Me too. Join me.
Untitled, produced and hosted by Malika Lee Whitney, will be heard on Fridays from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Untitled presents features on the arts, culture, education, and social issues. You will also enjoy music from a variety of genres. Special guests complement the program with insightful and engaging conversation. That's Untitled, Fridays from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. over listener-sponsored, non-commercial, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And WBAI.org.
This is Imhotep Gary Bird giving double thanks to WBAI listeners. For many years, you've supported my Friday show, The Global Beat Experience, and The Global Beat, where we explore the full dimension of black music and politics. And more recently, you've made my new Sunday evening program, Radio GBE Mind Flight, your gateway to the black experience, a success as well. In that spirit, I hope you show some of that same enthusiasm to some friends of mine who host a new show highlighting the people, music, and venues that made Harlem a cultural mecca. It's called The Harlem Connection. You're invited to get on board and take the journey every Friday evening with the